Entertainment in the car has graduated from the old radio and tape days to today's high-end systems made specifically for certain brands. Coming up next on Autoline This Week. Underwriting for Autoline This Week has been provided by BorgWarner. And now, here's your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on Autoline This Week. You know, when most people go out to buy a car, they look at things like the fuel economy or the safety or a number of things. But a lot of people want to know about the sound system. In fact, a lot of people will buy a car based on the sound system. And that is what we're talking about today, because we've got several experts in the room with us right now, including Alan Norton. He's a senior technical leader for automotive audio systems at the Lincoln Motor Company. Brandon Wheeler is the manager of customer programs at Harman, a company that makes all kinds of sound systems. And Tom Murphy is a friend and colleague of mine at Ward's Auto, and great having all three of you here today.
Thanks, John. Thanks for
having us. Alan, why don't I start with you? I think for a lot of people outside the industry, they don't know how much goes into engineering a sound system in a car. They think you just put in the radio, you put in the speakers, you're good to go. Walk us a bit through the process and give us an idea of just how involved it is.
Oh, there's a lot more involved than that. So the design starts way back at the concept phase when, you know, you're just looking at the general shape of the vehicle in sketch form. Things like positioning of speakers, the number of speakers we're going to have, where the passengers are in the vehicle. And it's taken through when the actual design of the vehicle is being put together. In parallel to that, there's the design of the actual transducers themselves. So the speakers are all designed for their application where they are, and the electronics that goes with that, the amplifiers and DSPs, which I think we might talk about a little bit later, a little bit more. And then finally, when we do get a physical vehicle, we have hundreds of hours of listening and tuning and tweaking and making sure we get it how we intended to do it.
So, Brandon, you're at the supplier. Do you come in and tell these guys, no, you got to change your design here so we can put the speakers here so it's going to sound better?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work that there's a lot of work that goes into that. I mean, you think of where the speaker's placed. I think a lot of people just, and even sometimes we take it for granted, the speaker's just in the door, the amplifier's connected, it works, right? But there's a lot more that goes into it. We have to look at the interaction of the materials around it, how it's mated to the doors or even the IP. The grill material, all those things are contributors definitely to the audio quality, just how natural it sounds, right? So in the early phase, like when we have the CAD data, we're looking at, well, where's the speaker placed? How's it angled? Where are the occupants in the vehicle? So there's a lot of things that go into really designing a great audio system, because all those things matter. There's reflections in the vehicle. There's absorption that you have from the materials in the vehicle. You know, cloth to leather, there's even a different response with the vehicle due to the seating material. So there's definitely a huge factor, and we try and take that into consideration really early on and make sure that we get a great system just before we even get the vehicle.
So if you're tuning a vehicle for a new audio system, do you actually put dummies in the car so that they're absorbing or reflecting sound? And depending on what they're wearing also, as you talk about the type of clothing, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's a leather jacket or it's a suit coat or something. Mm-hmm. Does that impact, I mean, do you get that far into it?
We get somewhat into that, but really before we even get into considering those effects, we really start with just we actually use a mic array to measure basically the variation between a seating height of different occupants. And then we go from actually sitting in the car and listening, and normally once we have people in the car, we're already kind of simulating those effects, right? When you have somebody that's wearing just a standard clothes or, you know, you get in and you're driving it, because we actually do take the cars on the road and we test them as well. So all those things are starting to, are taken into consideration definitely very early on, even from the second prototype build. We're on the road, we're testing, we're listening, we're taking measurements to really understand how are we affecting the audio system, but also how are we perceiving it in these different environments? Because it's not just static, you listen to the audio system, that's actually the least amount you listen to it. You're driving a car, right? So we do a lot of testing in those different realms to understand those effects for sure.
How long does it take to install, not physically install out on the assembly line, but to figure out, to fully engineer the system, how long does it take?
Well, it runs in parallel with the vehicle's development. So the Continental that's on the road right now, Brandon and I have been talking about probably for 2 to 3 years and to get to the point where it is today. You know, one of the really nice things with the Lincoln programs that we've been able to do with the Revel brand is we've actually got audio as a priority. So what you'll often see if you take a look at some vehicles, you can see that the cup holder won over the speaker, or the position for the Kleenex box was much more important than the location for the center speaker. We got buy-in really early on from the senior leadership of the company, so we've been able to really get, you know, the right decisions made as we've gone along and not have to try and work around things later. So this whole sequence that he just described that we're doing at the end becomes so much easier if the physicals of the vehicle are right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And even working with the program teams, you know, trim teams and in other areas, we really have to kind of express why we're doing these things. But I think a lot of the programs, normally when we go to the higher levels, the chief engineers, they understand because you know, we use a process to benchmark vehicles and to show where's this going to perform in the segment. And by benchmarking, I'm really talking about the audio quality. Basically, how do we gauge where this vehicle is going to rate in the competitive segment, and how are people going to perceive it, right? So we use a lot of data like that to also leverage, this is why we really want to put the speaker here, or this is why we want this many speakers, you know. So there's a lot of work that goes in on the front end, but I think so far the results are, you know, you can hear them for yourself, that they're really paying off. It's really, truly, I think, a great system, and it's one of our, from the benchmarking scores, is one of our best systems that we have on the road today.
And of course, you're talking about the Revel system, which is a branded name. Correct. Within the Lincoln Continental.
Yes.
Right. Do you have the latitude, though, to go to senior management and say, no, the materials that you've sourced for this interior, they're too hard, or else they're too soft, there's not a good balance, it's too much hard plastic, or we don't like the grade of that leather because it's not going to create the right environment for the sound system that we are creating for your car. Is there much give and take to that extent?
There's a good level of give and take. I mean, to be honest, the choice of the leather versus the acoustic targets isn't really quite as critical, but things like grills are really significant. And indeed, we started off with a grill that looked very good but didn't have the acoustic transparency we needed, so we had to change the design of the grill.
That's an amazing statement, because in the Continental, there's these beautiful speaker grills with all the different kinds of holes in them. I'm sure the designers set that pattern, and you must have come back and go, not that pattern.
The original one, yeah.
We went through, I think, 3 to 4 revisions on that pattern before we really said that's going to work. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that's where you learn, and that's why these systems, I think, keep maturing and becoming even better, is because there's not only a relationship we build, but also an understanding and knowledge of how Lincoln wants to execute the interiors of their vehicles, but also how we want to execute our audio systems. So we start to learn from what grill patterns are we going to use, testing them in an anechoic chamber. Also, again, there's the other interactions. It's not just the grill, because sometimes the speaker has to be at a certain angle to the interior, so that has to mate in a certain way, so there's a substrate. So not just putting a tube on it, which actually causes mid-range honkiness and things of that nature. So starting to flare edges and really get creative and solutions to make the audio system, again, just sound so much more natural. Less coloration, less effects from the materials, you know, in the very end. So
premium audio systems have become so popular. I mean, not just at the high end like in the Continental, but at entry-level vehicles, there's almost always going to be a premium audio system that's mm-hmm. available. Mm-hmm. Yet it's very subjective in terms of deciding, yes, this is the best sound system that I've ever heard. Or how are consumers supposed to be deciding between, you know, are consumers even going that far as picking cars based on, that's the sound system that I want?
Well, you want to go for it?
Oh, I'd certainly love to think they were doing that. It's obviously a priority. One of the things that we do very diligently is look at customer feedback. So if you buy a new Lincoln vehicle or a Ford vehicle, a few months after you receive it, you'll get a survey. And we read every single comment that comes back from those things. And that really does tell us that audio, the interaction with the audio system and the way it performs, is something which customers really value, especially when it doesn't do what they expect. It's certainly is up there. In terms of the target, so our ideal audio system is one that gets to the point where the person that originally recorded the music would say, yes, this is how I intended it to sound. And in fact, one of the things we do with Revel is spend a lot of time encouraging engineers and ourselves as well, listening to consumer Revel high-end audio speakers as well. That's our reference. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier, there's the situation you often come into is where you'll be listening to the system at the very end before you're about to let it out. And there's a piece of music where a note just keeps on irritating you. Mm-hmm. And after fiddling with it for ages and not being able to fix it, or maybe making other things worse, you go and listen to it in the reference room and it's actually on the recording. So, yeah, so it's very, really important to go back to that reference.
Do you find that there are a lot of premium audio systems out there that don't achieve that level of, you know, doing what the artist originally wanted in terms of the recording?
I think so. Certainly, there are some which have a characteristic. So the smiley-faced EQ is a, so you have a very increased bass and a very bright treble. Mm-hmm. That certainly isn't the target of the systems that we've been engineering together.
Mm-hmm. What about different customers in different countries? I know certainly colors can vary in popularity from region. Materials definitely can. Even the smell of leathers can be very different from, say, Asia to North America to Europe. What about from a sound standpoint, Brandon? Do people in Europe or Asia or North America want different characteristics?
I think there is some inherent differences in what we hear. And there's even a great research paper that shows the difference between people's voices and their flexion, even regionally from languages. But I think you look at the sound that normally in the Americas that we like, more modern music, most people like a little bit more bass in some other music, at least the younger generation does. And I think that's sometimes why we see this trend of smiley faces, that I think we're more exposed to it here in the U.S. because that's what's more popular sometimes. But I know even with the spatial, normally what we say is left, center, and right, you know, where instruments or vocalists are placed in the image, that effect of where they're at is even different. I know in Europe, normally they like the vocalist or the center image to be actually over the steering wheel, whereas in the U.S. we try and aim to be a little bit more to the right or even at center of the vehicle, basically we say like at the hood ornament, you know, for the vocalist. So that definitely does have some impact regionally, but I think overall though, people still have the same perception of what they like in good audio. I think there's some deviation sometimes, but again, I think once we get down to really the nitty gritty, I think it really is similar. I think people have the same subjective feeling for what is good audio.
So we've never argued about where the image should be, have we?
Not at all.
What about audio platforms, though, from region to region? Here in the U.S., it's hard to buy a car today that has a CD player in it. Mm-hmm. And there might still be regions of the world where people want cassette players. So how do you, you know, since everybody's wanting to develop world cars that are the same, you know, from market to market, isn't it difficult to accommodate so many different needs in terms of what people are listening to, whether it's MP3s or whether it's mostly satellite radio or whether it's cassettes mm-hmm. or something else? 8 tracks.
At least from our side, from the supplier side, you know, we look at it regionally from the standpoint of normally these vehicles are built in different regions, so we have to start out from where it's originating from, but there are also variants. So that gives us actually the leverage to try and make those variant changes based on the regions. So we'll have multiple EQs for different variants of vehicles. Mm-hmm. So if it's a European style car and we know that's just normally Europe, we normally have it benchmarked in Europe. So we have, again, a listening pool that's based heavily out of Europe. But then we do the same thing for American cars as well. We have them benchmarked here, actually in our office in Novi. So we do some of that research to make sure that we're covering, you know, what is good sound from the perception of males, females, different ages, and all those things. But they're trained listeners. So again, we're trying to take some of that, I guess you could say, subjective bias out of it by using more of an objective approach to really having trained listeners, you know, verify is this good sound or not. So we do look at it from a platform and variant standpoint for sure. But I think, again, once we get down to what is good sound, I think we're able to really find out that it's really more of just, is it an even response? does the spatial accuracy, is it really focused or is it blurry? You know, there's certain elements that people look for and they don't even realize they're doing it, you know, so.
So in terms of the media, where you were going with the question in terms of CD and so on, if you look at automotive, it's following the consumer trend. So CD usage is absolutely going down, even where we still have vehicles with it. Our customer feedback is telling us that it's not being used as much. Streaming is becoming the predominant alternative to live radio via either satellite or FM broadcast, actually, is still very popular. And that actually is a problem in the audio world because we've got a multi-thousand-dollar retailing audio system with the cutting-edge DSP technology and loudspeakers, and unfortunately, people are listening to very poor audio sources. So that's one of the challenges for our industry as we're moving forward.
Is that even in the case of like high-definition FM broadcast?
That's still only really about as good as a very good MP3. Mm-hmm. It's still a lossy.
So what you're saying is satellite radio, streaming music through your phone or a thumb drive really is not a very good source of music.
We make the most of it we can. And, you know, it's a different target, really. You're not listening to those medias because you want an audiophile experience. But one of the things that we're constantly discussing is how do we make it more accessible so that, you know, what the system can do, that making your hairs on your arms stand up or, the effect of hearing amazing music, how do we make that accessible to customers? And that's the challenge for all of us moving forward. And that's got to be in some form of streaming as we move forward. Yeah.
Another challenge is Tom and I test drive a lot of cars a year. I myself probably test drive about 100 cars. And jumping in and out of different cars, trying to get the audio system to work can be a major pain in the neck. I mean, even just trying to go from FM to AM at sometimes, you got to search for it all. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you also address when you put together your sound systems is try to give the owner a lot of opportunity to adjust the sound as he or she may want it, but maybe not make it too complicated?
So the way we approach that is we look at the overall user experience. We do a thing called journeys. We look at a journey wheel, which is you look at your use case there. I'm getting into a strange vehicle for the first time, and I'm trying to change a radio source. And we'll watch you do that, and then look at the pain points on your journey as you do that in micro detail. Then we try to design, or we take that input and we put it into the HMI, the interface of the vehicle's design. So you'll see Sync 3, our latest generation, is significantly, refined in terms of how quickly you can get between things, and then the experience you have with it is really good. In terms of the audio system, we want to allow customers, there is taste, right? It's not a case of we can tell you what you need to listen to. So we have the ability to make fine adjustments. But what we're always trying to have as a priority there is that the refinement isn't lost. So you can salt and pepper, is the expression that one of our engineers likes to use, the sound. And you can change the sound stage or the amount of immersion you're getting with QLS around in the Revel system. Mm-hmm. But it's not adding artifacts. It's not putting in reverb or making the music something it isn't. It's still remaining true to the source that it started out with. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned reverb. I noticed the introduction of a bit more reverb than I'm used to in certain songs that I've been listening to all my life. And so we spent some time in the Continental for our 10 Best Interiors evaluation. Lovely interior, great sound system, really liked the Revel experience. And there are three grades. I don't know if you've been in this yet, but you can start with the system off, or you can go to on stage, where you're like on stage with the band performing, or you're in the audience. So when you're in the audience, there's a little bit more reverb that's introduced. Mm-hmm. But can you talk about those stages, those three different, how it is differing for people within the cabin of the car?
Well, it's optimized for every position. So one of the nice things about the Lincoln systems is that you get a really good rear seat experience as well as sitting in the driver's seat. But you described it very well. So off is basically stereo. So that's what, that's the one we end up tuning first most of the time.
But that's still surround sound?
No, it's basically an image process across the front. So it's equivalent to listening to your high-end audio system at home, sitting in front of in front of the speakers. There is obviously sound from behind because there's also a stereo image for the people behind you as well. That you can't separate the two zones. So that's really the audiophile setting. The audience mode, as you described, is basically moving back from that sound stage and getting some of the ambience around you. One of the key things, though, is that the QLS algorithm isn't adding effects. It's actually time slicing or positionally slicing the sound stage and repositioning it in the vehicle. Yep. So one of the key nice things about QLS is if you take all the slices and put them back together, you end up with stereo again. So you've not added artifacts not there. And on stage really is a bit of fun. So it's doing the same thing but putting the band around you.
You can tell it's like musicians are moving inside the cabin with you. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, that voice wasn't there before. Now it is because I made a switch.
You hear Sting's footsteps go behind you.
Yeah.
It's a nice experience. Yeah.
Brandon, one thing I wanted to ask you about is a technology that Harman's working on. I think you guys call it individual sound zones. Mm-hmm. I call it the cone of silence. And just to explain it briefly for the audience, it's where you can have five people in a car. They can all be listening to different music at different volumes, and the people sitting around the car will only hear what they're listening to. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if a phone call comes in, they can take a phone call and still not hear what others are listening to, even though it might be quite loud for each one of those people. Mm-hmm. I saw a demonstration of this a couple of years ago by Harman. I was knocked out by it. Mm-hmm. Is this coming to production any day?
Well, we're working on the technology, obviously. But it's something that we definitely want to bring to production for sure. There's a lot of benefits to it, but I think the biggest thing that we have to realize too is that for ISE to really truly work well, we have to get really well, or we have to get great cooperation within, you know, our automotive companies to actually place speakers where we need them. The big thing about ISE is that it works really closely with the placement of the speakers, because we have to be able to cancel as well as isolate certain elements of the music or other sources that are in the vehicle. So the challenge for us is not how soon can we get it there, it's how can we implement everything into it, into the vehicle speaker-wise, to actually make this really work to the best of its ability. Obviously, we don't want to put something out that's not truly doing what we want it to do. It is pretty impressive what you can do with ISE, and the ability to have somebody take a phone call in the front seat and pass it behind them, or no longer have prompts going to everybody in the car. Mm-hmm. I think that's really something different in the industry that you just don't see. So it's quite exciting, and I think it definitely brings something new to the in-car experience, especially for larger sedans, or you know, people who are normally driving 4 to 6 people around in a car. That allows you to really, I guess, separate all these different elements. You know, kids with a movie in the back, you're driving up north. That's a great example. You know, you don't want to hear Lilo and Stitch in the back, you know, while you're trying to drive. So you can separate those things out. So I think it's really exciting, and you'll definitely see more on it definitely to come, for sure.
Is this setting us up for autonomous cars, where we're all going to have our own little pod within a car, even without walls in between?
That
because,
would be...
Because, I mean, if the driver doesn't have to really focus on the road, then mm-hmm. you're opening the door to mm-hmm. on-road parties, if you want, really. Yeah. Everybody can be doing their own thing. So, I mean, it has to open the door pretty wide for things you can do with audio systems mm-hmm. well into the future.
You took the words out of my mouth, actually. So that is one of the key things. If you look at the way the vehicle's evolving, mobility, the way you may be sharing a vehicle with somebody you don't know and don't want to talk to mm-hmm. necessarily, and it may be time to tell you that your stop is coming on our ride share and you don't need to disturb everybody else. Mm. So there are lots of applications for that kind of technology that will open up as we move forward.
Yeah. I'm curious about you two personally. Do you have perfect pitch? I mean, how do you know when you get this all engineered that you go, yeah, that's it, this is the sound?
We have opinions.
Perfect pitch, normally, when I hear that, I think more if I sing an A, I actually hit an A.
Right.
I definitely am not perfect pitch in that regard. Myself,
pitch maybe might have been the wrong word, but
a trained ear,
definitely,
yes. Yeah, I mean, going through just being a fan of music, I think you can actually train yourself, but there's a lot more to it as well. It's training listening from the aspect of not just spectral, but spatially, dynamics. There's a lot of elements to music that I think people, you just don't realize it until you find something. And even a good song, you don't realize it's a good song because of those elements are really truly embedded in that music, you know. I guess I would say I'm a trained ear, and at work sometimes they call it an expert ear, basically because you've tuned vehicles, you know, long enough, you know what to listen for, you know what interactions are going on. So I guess you could say I'm a trained listener, and maybe just a bit overcritical of audio systems sometimes. You know, when you walk into somebody's house and you say, well, those are pretty good speakers, and they say, oh, it's fantastic. You just kind of have to hold back your opinion sometimes and say, yeah, it's pretty good, you know. So it's a blessing and a curse as well, because new music comes out and you want to pick everything apart, you know, instead of just listening and enjoying sometimes. So.
That's good. How about you, Alan? I never thought of this. You know, it's one thing to tune a guitar, but you guys are tuning cars.
Well, yeah. I think we both are certainly very critical listeners. We spend a lot of time listening to find details and actually value each other's opinions. We very rarely disagree when something's wrong. When you get to the point where you think you're finished, though, we really need data to drive those decisions. So, you know, we cannot sign off a vehicle on one person's opinion, and that's where this process comes in again, where you look at, okay, statistically how people have evaluated vehicles in the past, and making sure that you are going to really address the demographic of, you know, a very wide demographic of customers.
So, for the number of speakers in a system, Revel has what? There's two. There's Revel, and then there's Revel Ultima. And one has 19 speakers?
Depending on the vehicle, 19 to 20.
19 to 20, okay. And how do you keep the weight out of those speakers, though? Because that's, you know, weight is the enemy of every vehicle development program, and it's got to be difficult when you've got magnets in these speakers, especially the big ones. Mm-hmm. It's got to be hard to keep the weight down, yet you still want the great sound.
And we need a quick answer. We're down to the end.
So the quick and short is basically we use a combination of neodymium speakers, so neo magnets we call them, and also some of the larger drivers are ferrite, but they're high efficiency. So basically what that means is that they don't need as much power to output a lot of sound. So with the help of the amplifier, we're actually able to get higher efficiency out of the speaker while driving the magnet size down. So by doing both of those elements, we're able to take some of the weight out. And obviously, we're always looking for ways to kind of improve on the weight savings as well. So.
And with that, we're going to have to wrap it up. Alan Norton, Brandon Wheeler, Tom Murphy, thank all of you. A very interesting discussion on audio systems in cars, and hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did.
Underwriting for Autoline this week has been provided by BorgWarner.